Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 322 of the More Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell, and I'm in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
We have Mark Rubin on the line in San Jose, California.
Oh.
Right, and we're recording on the second last day of the year, December 30th, 2020. Seems like it's March 2020, right? anyway, let's start off with some fact check. We were talking about the iPhone X ship date. It was November 3rd, 2017. I'm not sure what the context was. I think we were just talking about how late it shipped or something. And we were sort of joking around the price of the new AirPods Max, the over-the-ear noise-canceling wireless cableless headphones from Apple. And I was talking about Bang & Olufsen and B&O. They actually have a product called BioPlay, which they have an H4 second-generation model, which is $349. So it is cheaper than the AirPods Max. But they do, in fact, have a H95 model, which is $1,100 US. So they do, in fact, have more expensive headphones than the Apple product. And that's good to know. Anyway, do we have any Ask MTGC? I mean, I guess not, eh?
I didn't see any. Let me give it one last refresh.
No. Sure.
No, nothing. Nothing new. People are taking the holidays off.
Yeah, people have stuff to do this week.
Which, you know,
or not to
or
do.
Not we, we've, you know, had the rare opportunity, which we don't normally record during the holidays for us, right? Because normally we're out and about doing stuff. But the new pandemic rules, so we're given this very, very rare, as we record here, is on December 30th, which is pretty unusual for us. Usually we're out and about.
Yeah, I mean, Mark has traveled to the in the past during this time, and, you know, day before New Year's as well, right? So usually busy time for everybody. But we're on full lockdown here in Ontario for a couple more weeks, which basically means everything's closed. How about you guys?
Yeah, we are too. They just found the first instance of the new UK super contagious strain here in California and LA, which is not good.
We have four cases here in Canada, three in Ontario and one in BC, as far as I know. And we're also record-breaking 2,900 cases today, in new cases today in Ontario, 1,000 in Toronto, which is, for us, is crazy. We were down to like 50 a day back in June, July, right? So, but I also heard that that super contagious strain may, in fact, not be super contagious. They don't really know yet, right? Too early to tell. But it's freaking people out, right? Have you guys got the vaccine down there yet?
It's here, but I haven't gotten it yet.
No. I mean, it's gonna be eons before we, any of us lowly people get it. But yeah.
Yep.
But unlike the US and Canada, they're giving it to all the frontline workers first instead of the politicians, right?
So, well, they're doing that for the most part here too, except for the photo shoots.
Anyway, I don't know if you heard that Marianne from Gilligan's Island passed away.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's a shame. I mean, she was 82, but...
Well, that's the target audience, right?
Yeah.
Anywho, so we'll, I think think last time we were talking, last show we were talking about this new commission structure for where if you make less than $1 million per year on App Store sales, you can apply to get to only be charged 15% on that first million. And I applied, I've been approved, and I believe that some developers are claiming they're already starting to see changes in the structure that they're what they're paying to Apple. Right,
I can confirm that. I have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you're getting more dollars per thing?
Yeah. So it appears, and I haven't done a rigorous study of this, but it appears to me that, for me at least, it only applies so far to sales in the U.S. Because I've seen,
oh, really?
I've seen sales from other countries that get the old rate. So,
all right, okay.
Yeah. So again, I haven't been real rigorous. Just did a couple of spot checks, and it looks like that's the case. But it seems like presumably because they're rolling it out early and they're just testing it in certain markets or whatever. So it makes a lot of sense. But for 100% for sure, I have seen today, as a matter of fact, I checked it just before the show, I am seeing 15% off on US sales,
right,
which is nice.
Right. Hmm. And people are saying this, that you, I think you said last week it was like last time we talked, you should say 21% increase in pay increase, I guess. Is that?
Well, that's just how the math works out, right? If you were getting 70% of sales and now you're getting 85% sales, that's actually a 21% increase in how much you get.
Okay.
Right.
Cool. But it's still 85% on the dollar sort of thing, right? 85% of the sale you're getting.
You get 85% of the sale. So when you go from 70% to 85%, that 15% difference is 21% of 70%.
Right.
Math. Tammy's head just exploded.
Well, you know what? I have her book in my pick. I gotta say, there's an awful lot of math in that book. Mm. I just, you know, was telling Carol yesterday, I'm like maybe two chapters to go to finish it because it's an area I'm interested in. But yeah, there's a lot of brain stretching vector computational stuff in there. So she's, you know, I think she's crying wolf a bit there. Mm. Anyway, moving on. So, I mean, in the last 2 weeks since we recorded, there's been a lot of discussion about Apple Car. And so this link I've got here is from a few days ago anyway. Ming-Chi Kuo, our famous, you know, prognosticator. I mean, there was rumors that Apple was going to be coming out with a car in a couple of years. He's sort of put a date on it, 2025, maybe later. And then I think even Elon Musk even weighed in on some of the story around this. Have you guys been following this story at all?
Yeah, Elon Musk claims that he tried to sell to Apple and Tim Cook said no, which is kind of the opposite of what we heard at the time, that Apple made an offer and Elon said no. So kind of,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We don't, who knows? We'll never know the truth.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I suppose it is competition for Elon Musk. Should he really be worried about Apple at this point in time? And, you know, he's already got a leg up on most of the people with electronic cars, right?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, yes, Tesla has a lot of very positive mind share and market share, but they actually don't sell, they haven't sold that many cars yet. They're right, still ramping right. up. So it's not like they've, you know, taken the market and have a commanding hold on the market. And people are pretty fickle with cars anyway, right? With brands. I mean, do you always buy the same brand car every time? No, right? So it's certainly possible that when something new and fancy comes out, that people will jump over. But I think the hardest part from a technology point of view, the hardest part is the battery, right? And Apple's pretty good at batteries. And we know that Tesla is spending a lot of time on battery technology, which they need to do. So if Apple can come out and really have some pretty, you know, revolutionary or even evolutionary things that just give them a real advantage on battery technology, that could really change the game.
Well, I mean, do you think Apple's going to hit the ground running, you know, with you think everybody's going to run out and buy an Apple car because it's got an Apple logo on it? Or
there won't be the kind of, you know, people lining up at the Apple store like they do or used to do when the new iPhone came out, because, you know, buying something for $1,000 is very different than buying something for, you know,
30, 40, 50,
whatever it is. Yeah. But yeah, we'll just have to see what they come up with. And with a car, though, you don't need to sell as many, right, to make a pretty good splash, and from a revenue point of view, at least profit. I'm not so sure, but you know, revenue, it's, you know, each one goes a long way.
Yeah. But I think that, I mean, the car market has, you know, been around for a long time. And I think that, like I said, there's a lot of good money to be made selling cars. It seems to be,
sure.
You know, a lot of people are involved in it and a lot of people are involved in the resale market. So it's obviously something that has value, right? So and just to fact check you on live here on the show, my first car was a Honda and my last car was a Honda.
What about all the ones in between, though? I've only had two cars in your life.
Well, I've owned a Renault at one point, a used Renault, and I owned a brand new Dodge car at one point. My parents' car was a Dodge that I drove when I was a kid.
Okay.
So Dodge is probably my American fave, I guess. And it was a Dodge Dart, you know, with slant six, so it was kind of a cool car. But my first car was a Honda Civic. I've had several versions of it and switched over to CRV, you know, about 97, and I'm now into my second CRV. They last a long time, so mm-hmm. I'm pretty loyal to Honda. Anywho, that's that. But I used to do a lot of the work on my car myself, right? So,
all right, then will you buy an Apple car when it comes out just because it has an Apple logo?
You know, to be honest with you, probably not, because I mean, you know, like we, Carol and I, sort of, you know, agreed that our next car would be an electric car, like this is going back, or some sort of, you know, hybrid car. We probably made that resolution like 10 years ago or so, and we just, you know, when the time came, we just bought another Honda CR-V, like even a 2004 we bought in 2016, right? So it was already a, you know, 12-year-old car. So yeah, I don't know. Not really using cars these days because, I mean, you know, I'm living downtown and commuting on transit and stuff. So, you know, I used to have my last Honda. I used to sit on the sidewalk and rust in front of the, you know, as I work from home. And I just thought I don't need a car that much, especially when I live right in the city and I've got access to transit and whatever. Notwithstanding, you know, COVID, but,
it is kind of an interesting thing that, you know, in 10 years or even 5 years, the car landscape could be very, very different from what it is now. Because self-driving cars are coming on fast. And when you have self-driving cars, then the whole idea of a self-driving Uber that just shows up whenever you need it becomes a kind of an interesting thing, you know. And so people might not own cars as much. I mean, look at this generation of, you know, 20-something year old, you know, half of them don't even know how to drive. Never mind own a car. So, you know, we might be in a kind of a paradigm shift here where people don't really have their own cars anymore. And when you need a car, you just call a self-driving Uber that shows up and it picks you up and takes you away.
That's a good point, because we've always been a two-car family, mm-hmm. you know. And because I was working from home, I think I got rid of my car in around 2014. And because I'm like right on the transit line, so it's not a huge issue. And then, you know, Zipcar came along. So if I needed a car for any length of time, I could just, you know, I had a Zipcar membership, I could just grab one of those and go, and I could use the same membership card when I was in San Francisco if I wanted. And then Uber came along, and I used to use the Uber cabs. Like I would call a cab on Uber, and because I figured the cab drivers are out there anyway, you know, polluting the environment, and if they're not getting dispatched by their dispatcher, I would use the Uber to call them. So I mean, you know, and I still use Uber and Lyft, you know, occasionally when I need to get around, especially now in COVID, right? You want to try and limit your exposure as much as possible, right?
So you do take the Uber or the Lyft, or you drive yourself?
Today I had to go to do some lab work. I just drove up in my car. Like if I'm going for a quick, you know, rather than get on transit, which I could do because of COVID and concerns and stuff like that, and idiots on the transit system. And our transit system is still a bit overcrowded, even with the restrictions. And there are people who refuse to wear masks and stuff like that. So I just don't want to, you know, risk it. So yeah, I'll just jump in the car and drive over.
So I was contrasting taking an Uber versus driving yourself, but you were contrasting taking the public transportation versus taking an Uber or driving yourself. And I guess even taking an Uber from an exposure point of view is better than taking public transport.
Yeah, I mean, I have taken an Uber in COVID times, and basically the car was just basically, the guy had like a big, you know, clear vinyl wrap between me and him.
Oh, really?
And
that's interesting.
Yeah. And the back of the cars are, I don't know what it's like, you know, our Toronto cabs here are, they're pretty much like the vinyl seats in the back, and they're pretty utilitarian. I mean, the other thing too is because I work in the major banking building downtown, if I need to grab a cab, I just walk up the door and there's like, you know, five or six of them sitting there waiting to take you somewhere, right? So, you know, it's not like I'm in the middle of the suburbs or something like that, or out in an industrial area where there's no cars around, right? So for me, it's like if Apple comes out with a car and they have some sort of like car sharing kind of deal, or like you said, they come Uber or something like that, they have like they Uber them or whatever, you know, make them available for that sort of purpose or cabs or whatever. That would be something I would use. So, but yeah. I don't know if I would, I'm not in the sort of buying mode to spend $50,000-$60,000 on a car right now. Right. Yeah. I just don't need it. So, and I think a lot of people in my neighborhood wouldn't necessarily have cars for that purpose either. Like they might have, like a lot of people in my neighborhood don't own cars. Right.
Yeah. You do have to wonder what Apple's business plan is, because it is a little hard to see them, especially the way the trends are going. It's a little hard to see them just, you know, opening up, you know, the Tim's used cars, you know, lot down the, or Tim's Apple car deal. Not, I don't mean Tim Mitra. I mean, I'm talking Tim Cook.
Tim Cook. Yeah. I know,
Tim's car dealership down on the corner of, you know, Stevens Creek Boulevard. People in Silicon Valley know what I'm talking about. But that's a big business with a lot of manual labor. Maybe that's the wrong word, but it's labor intensive. You know, you need a lot of space. It's not the typical kind of business that Apple's in. So I wonder, well, I suppose they have Apple stores, so that sort of doesn't.
Yeah, but they're not building the building, like you're saying. Like they're not.
Yeah.
An Apple store is inside a retail mall, right? It's not, or it's on a city street. And it's not like they're getting, like you have to have, like you said, you have to have inventory, you have to have cars hanging around. Mind you, that said, I mean, it's probably like that in the Valley too, because like in San Francisco and stuff like that, because we have some car dealers that are downtown, but they're like, they have the elevators for the cars, right? And they don't necessarily have, they don't spread out like a shopping mall kind of parking lot kind of deal, right? So there are dealers downtown that have cars, you know, not necessarily, like you can look at them in the showroom, like there's a Porsche dealer and there's a Honda dealer and there's a few other BMW dealers, and they have, like, they might have one or two models in the showroom, but if you want to take one for a test drive, they go to a local garage, bring one out, and that's the car you try.
Yeah, right? And that's how Tesla does it too. So they don't really have Tesla dealerships, I don't think. So it, like, would be some way. But where I was going with that is, I wonder if Apple does have something different in mind. Yes, they'll make cars.
From a business model point of view, you mean, right?
From a business model, yeah. Yes, they'll make cars, but maybe they won't actually sell them to consumers. Maybe it will only be through somewhere like an Uber that you'll have these Apple cars or something like that. It'll only be for fleets of driverless cars or something like that, or something different to distinguish themselves. Or
would they partner with, like, say, a Volkswagen or something like that? Like, would there be a, because I mean, there's some dealerships you can go to that have rare cars, like, you know, Jaguars and stuff like that. They don't necessarily have a Jaguar dealer, but they'll have a dealer that's like, well, got a number of,
maybe you don't, but cars. Here in Silicon Valley we do.
Like just a Jaguar, like that's all they, well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
sorry,
actually,
I forgot who I'm talking to here. Yeah,
no. Somebody's got to sell the Lamborghinis to the post IPO.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like there's a guy in Oakville here. Oakville's like it's connected to the GTA in a sense, but there's a guy there whose buds imports cars, and he's got, like, you know, Mercedes not Mercedes, what are those other ones, the Italian ones, Maserati, Lamborghini, mm-hmm. you know, Jaguar, Austin Martin. He'll have like those types of cars on his lot. You know, mind you, there's a Porsche dealer downtown too, like I said before, and it's like they've got like all the Porsches you could, you know, possibly want, right? And they've got like a whole parking lot with, you know, new cars sitting in it waiting for you to take them away. Because we do have, like where I work, I mean, the cars that drive down there in downtown Toronto are all sort of the fancy smancy, you know, expensive cars, right? Because they're paying through the nose for parking as well, right? But interesting.
I didn't even realize until I just looked it up that Jaguar has an electric car.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. 2020 Jaguar I-Pace HSE.
Yeah, we go to Xavier, my grandson, is big into cars. And so we go to the auto show every year here in Toronto. I think this year we didn't go, obviously, for COVID. But, you know, they have all the car manufacturers, you know, come into this big, you know, convention center downtown. It's about the size of the McHenry, right? And they do, you know, all you can, and just about everybody had some sort of electric vehicle. Like I probably have like on my street. I mean, we had a Tesla show up here about 5 years ago. But I think there's probably about five or six Teslas within a dog walk around my house, you know, and then, you know, I've got some of those Volts and Leaf cars as well. Lots of Prius cars in my neighborhood. So it's not like I'd probably say maybe 5 or 10% of the cars in the neighborhood are already electric or hybrid, right? So yeah, it's not unusual. Anyway, let's move on from cars. But yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see where this goes. But I'm sure, speaking of which, I'm sure Jaime's just chomping at the bit to talk about the Xbox. So why don't we do that?
Well, I mean, more specifically, the sad womp womp. So personal one here.
Womp,
so this is actually an article from The Verge from like November. But I sit here on my desk is a Robot White Xbox Series X controller, which is, as of this recording, still not supported by iOS and macOS. So this article had said, hey, maybe 14.3. But no, that didn't come to pass. So I'm still waiting here. It's a bummer because I was hoping to use it with Apple Arcade and Steam, and the devices just don't recognize it as anything other than a Bluetooth thing. And just,
oh, really?
It just doesn't work. And it blows my mind, that this controller could be so different that it doesn't just fit into proper MiFi support, you know?
Well, does PlayStation's controller work with iOS devices, right? Don't they?
To be really clear, because folks might be confused. So I'm talking about the very brand new controller that comes out with the new Series X or Series S Xbox, the latest Xbox. I don't know if the same problem exists for the PS5 controller. This article claims that it did at the time. I don't know because I didn't buy one of those. I don't know if that is still true. I haven't looked into that. But it's still a bummer because you would think, you know, it should be a pretty easy MiFi. Like, all right, what's the delta between this Xbox controller and this other one? All right, cool. Here's your rubber stamp. Go through, you know, a little bit of testing and call it good. So very, very disappointed that I don't even know which side to blame. So I'm blaming both Microsoft and Apple until one of them, you know, tells us otherwise of whose fault this is.
Well, if you've ever done any work with the MFI program, you know there is no such thing as a simple rubber stamp in that program. Right. Just doesn't exist.
Right.
So I still don't know who to blame then. Is it, you know, Microsoft, you know, here's two scenarios in my head. Microsoft is like, hey, we're pretty busy. It's going to be down to wire to get these darn consoles out as it is. Should we spend engineering time on the MiFi certification? Heck no, get the damn controllers out there for the people who are buying Xboxes and we'll worry about connecting to iOS devices later. Or it could also be, you know, Apple's like, nope, this is a completely different controller, so we're going to run it through the whole gamut and etc. Or maybe some combination thereof. But nevertheless, I sit here with a controller that is sadly doing nothing. Just sitting on my desk waiting for, you know, some new version of iOS or macOS. I really don't care which because Apple Arcade is available on both I can use.
So I just, you know, did a quick search here on the Google and I found an article from, when is this from? This is iMore, beginning of the year, just talking about the PS4, the Xbox One controller and the Steam controller working on the Mac. So,
oh yeah.
And I presume that would work on iOS as well. And I do know that there was a book that I'm going to talk about later where there was some sort of hint about, you know, using controllers with your devices. But
if people are wondering, well, hey, dummy, why did you get this one? It's like, well, I thought, okay, how long could it take to get, you know, the thing certified? How long could it take for the iOS update to come? I was like, I'm sure it'll come out. I might as well, if I'm going to buy a controller, I might as well buy from one of the newer consoles, right? One that will continue to be manufactured in case I need to replace it and et cetera. And I got bitten by the window of time during which this thing is just a plastic brick.
Is it a wired or a wireless controller?
This is a wireless one.
Wireless one, okay.
Yeah, Bluetooth
connection. But you don't have an Xbox?
I do not. I did not buy.
Oh, you just bought the controller?
I just bought the controller, and that's like a whole episode in and of itself why did you get this one over the PS5? I personally prefer the Xbox controllers over the PlayStation controllers. So I thought, oh, I'll use this. I'll use it with Steam because I've been playing games on Steam for macOS. I've been looking forward to like, oh, you know, the clock is ticking down when I need to start using that free Apple Arcade, promotional trial thing that came with purchasing my iPhone. So, all right, I'll go ahead and turn this on. I'll use the controller. And I was like, oh no, I've made a horrible mistake. My Apple Arcade usage is ticking down while I'm waiting for the update to come out to iOS or macOS so I could play some of the games that have controller support.
Interesting. I'm just reading here too that there's no haptic feedback. I'm talking about you connecting a PS5 controller to a Mac or PC. There's no haptic feedback. The adaptive triggers are these triggers you can just gently squeeze on the PS5 that don't work on Mac as well. But these are tough life choices, my friend.
I'm not surprised that the fancy pants stuff that's in the newest controllers wouldn't work because I just wouldn't guess the MFI program. It's because MiFi from Verizon had me thinking about that. So the made for iPhone program. I would have been very surprised if they have any sort of expanded profile that goes into the specifics of what these controllers can do. Because I've heard really cool things about Sony's newest PS5 controller from John Siracusa's description of it. I just wanted basic buttons, like, you know, I press X, X goes. I press the directional pad goes. These Apple Arcade games are not going to be incredibly complicated. This isn't, you know, Forza. This isn't, you know, Final Fantasy or something. It's just like, dude, I just want Sonic Racing to go left and right. And I want to be able to press the gas with a button instead of pressing, you know, on screen.
Keyboard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, using the, what is it, I've forgotten the key commands. Is it, JKLIM was the right controller, and then I forget what the, I think
WASD is the traditional for the left hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the space bar to fire, right? Those were the days, my friend. I thought they were gone, but I guess they're back. What are you going to do? Yeah. I do know that I do hear, again, I'm not a huge gamer, right? But I do hear about people and in writing games, a lot of tutorials I read are talking about using controllers with your games and how you write them and stuff like that. And Gameplay Kit and Gameplay Kit, I believe, does that. Support for these type of controllers as well, but that's a chapter that's not been written yet, I guess, in these books. Anywho, all right. So yeah, since we're at the second last day of the year, we thought we would just take a quick look at the year that's passed. And we have got these links here for inspiration, but we haven't got them in any particular order. So why don't we just pick something from these? And we've already talked about the 15% developer deal, so we can cross that off the list, right? Let's just go through some of the big stories from the year, right? What do you think? Pick one. Talk about it. Okay, I'll go first. What about Apple One? I'm looking forward to using Apple One to finally consolidate my accounts. I'm just waiting till my middle of January. I think I'm going to do it because I think my Apple TV free subscription expires February 1st, I believe. So I'm still paying separately on different Apple IDs for iCloud and for Apple iTunes and Apple Music. Both of my Apple IDs are in the same family, so at least I don't worry about not sharing the same content. But apparently when you sign up for Apple One, you can choose which of the Apple One accounts you have is going to be the main one. And I'm hoping to finally get down to the point where I have one bill from Apple for all of my services. And I'm going with the family version. I'm not going to go with the premier version, right? So I have no need for, I don't at this point need any fitness stuff. And what's the other thing you get with news, I think it is, with
Apple One? You get Arcade. Don't you get Arcade? You get TV, music, news. You get fitness. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have it.
With the free right now, since I'm not paying for Apple TV, I'm paying $14-something a month between my iCloud and my Apple Music, right? I believe. Yes. I think I'm paying $4 for iCloud and for the storage, and I'm paying $11 or $12 for Apple Music. And the sad part about it is that, you know, we've always sort of used one Apple ID, Carol and myself. So if Carol's usually out doing shopping and standing in lines waiting to get in the grocery store, she's listening to Apple Music, which means I can't listen to Apple Music at the same time because they only let you listen to one at a time. So I'll get Arcade even. So I'll get Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, iCloud, and I'll get Apple Arcade as part of that. Although, like I said before, I tried the Arcade, but it really didn't. I mean, that was like when it first came out. I really didn't see any reason to keep it. So yeah. So individual is $14.95 a month, and you get Music, TV Plus, Arcade, and iCloud for 50 gigabytes of iCloud.
Yeah, I mean, if you use a couple of those, then it totally makes sense because Music is $10 a month itself. iCloud is what, $2 or something like that for 50, or is it $1? I forget.
It's cheaper, I think. Yeah, 99.
Yeah, so that's $11 just for Music, and iCloud is $11. TV Plus, probably most people still have TV Plus for free, but once they start, if you want to pay for that, that's what, $5, or is that $10? I don't remember anymore.
I think it's $4.99 or $5 for either one.
Yeah. But that puts you over the top, or Arcade, same deal. You know, if you use Music and Cloud and one of the other two, then yeah, you're saving money. It's worth it.
Yeah, I just signed up for the you know, the hey, you have a new iPhone, activate Apple Arcade for free here. I was like, all right, cool. And the thing that confused me at first was it showed me on the very next screen is like, hey, like you could actually save money given what we see that you have. And it saw that it had Apple Music, saw that I'm on Apple TV Plus, and it says, all right, and plus iCloud, and you've got the Apple Arcade you're about to activate. And they're quite right that if I literally kept all of those, it would be like $5 cheaper, I think, right, to go with the one tier. But I'm like, well, thank you, you know, Fancy Pants Call to Action UI, but I'm going to be dropping that Apple TV Plus relatively soon here, and Apple Arcade would basically just be taking that place. So it really doesn't work until I have both of those in there. And I truly am saving the $5.
So are you not going to renew Apple TV Plus is what I'm hearing?
No. Well, okay. So I have a thing in my settings app that tells me, hey, you bought a new new Apple device. You can get Apple TV Plus for free for a year. And I'm like, I bet I don't, because I already took advantage of that.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't if you already have
doubled it.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. So I'm probably going to end Apple TV Plus in February. I remember it was somewhere around the Academy Awards. I have a reminder on my calendar to tell me to cancel before the free subscription runs out.
And that's definitely. And the same if you're on a family. If one of the people in the family had the Apple TV Plus trial, that you can't buy. Because, I mean, I've bought like three devices that qualify for Apple TV Plus. And you would think, you know, for what are we talking about, right? They should be able to roll it in. But anyway, so the other thing, too, I want to point out, too, I don't know if you guys are probably on individual plans, but so Carol and I are on a family plan for iCloud. So we get 200 gigabytes of storage, and we both have, you know, phones. So between, we each have around 80 gigabytes of photos, and then, you know, so much for devices and stuff like that. But since we moved everything to iCloud, including the backup to the iCloud, we don't need as large a phone. Like, we're not storing stuff on our phones anymore. It's all up in the iCloud now, right? And we, you know, so pictures come down as you request them, and music and movies come down as you request them. So we don't really need, like, so we could have bought like 64. In fact, I just got a new phone. I just ordered a new phone from Rogers because one of ours died. And I'm getting an iPhone Pro, and I could have gone with a 64 gig model, because considering that I'm using iCloud for storage, right? So if you're on the family plan and you're getting 200 gigabytes of storage, you know, that may be enough to, like, you don't have to shell out the extra $100 or whatever it is. And although it's only $100, I mean, like, I ended up getting the 256 gig model anyway, because it was a few dollars more. It wasn't really prohibitively more expensive, right? So that's another angle to having iCloud, is if you're storing your data in the cloud, you don't need to have it on your phone, right? So, and even more, if you go to the premier model, you get 2 terabytes of space, and I can't imagine what I would do with 2 terabytes of space on my iPhone, but I don't carry that much data around as it is.
Can you even get 2 terabytes in your iPhone?
Yeah, you can. If the next level up is 2 terabytes of iCloud.
No,
if you go to the premier plan,
iPhone? I don't know.
An iPad you can. I think there's a 2 terabyte iPad, but I don't think there is for a phone.
Gotcha.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. To your point. Yeah. Again, you know, why would you need
why
that?
Would
right?
you? Well,
yeah.
If you do a lot of movie filming on your phone,
right?
That one,
right.
The only reason, I would think.
Right. Well, let's move on to the next thing here, which is the AirPod Max. We're just doing this alphabetically, I guess, or not really alphabetically, but so I've watched a few reviews on it. I haven't really got too deep into it, and I think a little bit more has come light. And I think the usual suspects that I would have suspected have gotten a pair seem to have gotten a pair. What do you guys, have you guys got any more experience with the AirPods Max at all, or even thought about them?
No personal experience, and I don't know of anybody who got some for Christmas, so I can't even give, you know, second or third hand anecdotal.
Wow, Santa bought me $500 headphones, I'd be happy. But I'd rather have a Mac Mini M1, to be honest with you, but for that price. Well, I think friend of the show, Joe, must have got a pair, because he was already talking about his favorite, I forgot the name of the company now, that makes the cases that he likes out of New York. They've already made a case for the AirPod Max, which he was espousing about, so, on Twitter. Anyway, that's all I know.
Yeah, I watched, is it MKBHD, did a couple of really good videos on his impressions of it, and it seems like it's pretty solid. Like, I think he makes it really clear, it's not going to be fitting the same job as reference headphones. Like, it's not meant for that, like, oh, I wanted to slap this in here and get audio production. It's like, well, it's trying to do things to the audio to make it a more enjoyable experience for you if you're listening to music, if you're watching movies. It's not really meant for, I need one-to-one reproduction of what is happening here, you know, listening to myself, you know, for the output that comes out as I give the input into the mic sort of thing, right? It's definitely not meant for that. It does sound like they're pretty good, that they compete pretty well. There is, of course, the Apple premium that you're paying for there, but other than the bananas case that it comes with, it seems like it's pretty solid from my understanding of his reviews.
Bananas case. Oh, Waterfield Designs is the name of the company and there's an article here from 9to5 Mac about them from a few days ago, from Christmas Day, actually. They've got nice, you know, nice sort of suede and leather and nylon-y kind of canvasy looking stuff that fits the headphones, and the bananas case will also fit inside, as Jaime described it. So that's the people who are making the case for it, if you're looking for such a thing to put around your head. I just wondered if anybody had seen it. I saw a pair that you can get a pair that somebody will have them dipped in gold already for you, right? So if you want your gold-plated, I think they're like, they were expensive. They weren't cheap.
Hey, whatever happened with that Apple Watch edition that you were thinking of picking up?
The guy never did confirm that it, in fact, was a legit edition. Mm. And when, because I asked him for the serial number, and I would, you know, think, then I could check it and do a lookup on it, right? From the pictures I looked at, looking at some of the writing on the bottom, it looked like a stainless steel bone or watch that had been coated in gold. So I don't think it was a legit Apple edition OG watch, right? Anyway, another big story this year was the Epic lawsuit. I don't know where we've landed on that other than this 15% discount that we're all getting, but I guess Epic's not getting, right?
Epic is not getting.
No, because they clearly make more than a million per year.
Right.
Yeah, and the lawsuit still continues. I don't think there's been news. You know, these things don't move very fast. I'm sure they're in discovery phase and et cetera. But what was it we called it on the other episode? The lead pipe to the knees, to the kneecaps. Definitely helped because Apple's position, at least, because you don't hear as many people backing Epic on this. It was like, oh, so they're not helping the little guy. And now it's just two giants fighting over their share of the money, which is a lot less interesting to the common person.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I had half of their problems. Or maybe I don't wish I'd had half of their problems at all. Somebody just posted a picture of the Ramones and it says 24 hours to go.
24 hours to go. Yeah.
24
hours to go. Yeah.
Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. That's pretty good. He's going to get a like from me for that one. So, I mean, I just watched, I went back and watched the platform. I watched the 18 minute version of the WWDC keynote to see what was new and exciting in there. And then I watched the platform State of the Union again, double speed, so I could sort of whip through it before we got into the show here. And I don't know if you guys remember or not, but they talked for about an hour of, you know, at least half of the show was just about the M1 or Apple Silicon.
Oh, yeah. It was the big story, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember us thinking at the time or wondering at the time, did they do that because it really was such a big deal in their minds? Or was it because they didn't have as much to talk about because people had been out for so long because of COVID, and clearly the Apple Silicon stuff had been in the works for a long time, so wasn't affected much by the virus, whereas other stuff that was on a shorter time scale just might not have been ready. They might have had to push it out and not release it, so it's hard to say. Yeah, but for sure that was hugely dominant in what they talked about at WWDC, kind of surprisingly.
Yeah, and now that people have got them, I'm seeing all kinds of reports on wonderful speed and stuff like that, and quick build times and things like that. So it's not been a flop in any sense. I've not heard any bad press or any bad reports from people online about it. Have you guys heard anything?
Yeah, there were one or two little glitchy things that I heard about that every once in a while you'd hear about someone had some issue. I don't know. Some of them were getting bricked in some update or something like that. But that happens all the time anyway. So I don't know that we can say it's specifically about the M1. But yeah, from all reports, the performance is just as amazing as promised. It really is amazing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, looking forward to getting one myself.
I'm sort of surprised you don't have one yet, Tim.
Oh, I do have the developer kit version, but it sort of sits under my desk and I forget it's there half the time, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think I'm probably going to pick one up. I'm just waiting to see what happens in the new year with if there's going to be any sort of announcement around the Pro versions, right? The MacBook Pro versions. But yeah, I might pick up a small Air or something like that at some point, but I'm just debating on, just putting together some money and collecting my, gift cards from my Apple gift cards from Christmas and things like that, to cover some of the costs. But yeah, at some point, pretty sure I'll get one. All right. For me, another big news thing was the idea that you could build a Swift UI app by getting rid of the app delegate. They basically made the ability to have a Swift UI based app be a first class citizen, which is kind of cool. So it means that, you can build it quickly, build an app that, and it's basically using the same sort of mostly MVVM model that Apple sort of adopted with Swift UI, rolling Combine into it makes it super cool for sort of reactive programming. So I started using some Swift UI inside of some of my Swift apps, as well as I think I mentioned to you guys I have an app that's written in Objective-C, has had some Swift added to it, and I'm writing an applet in Swift UI for it, right? So kind of a three-headed monster, right? And it's been pretty smooth developing that, right?
Yeah. So this didn't really surprise you, though, that they had this new Swift UI apps, right? Because it was kind of a natural evolution.
No, it was good that they did. I mean, it would seem to me like, you know, Swift UI was going to be dependent on, like, you know, when Swift first came along 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we still were carrying along a lot of Objective-C, right? Mm-hmm. You know, at first, right? There was a lot of frameworks were still in Objective-C, and you had to, you know, the add objc handler and stuff that in your Swift, if you were calling methods, that had to be looked at by Objective-C. But I don't know. I just thought the app delegate was going to sort of be the, you know, the main function that's in there would be the sort of the starting point for most apps, right? And I think this is just what they've done here is they've taken, you know, Swift UI and they've abstracted that away to make that, you know, something you can do. I didn't think that I hadn't really thought that they could or would or did. So I was actually delighted when they did do that, right? So personally. So yeah, I guess I was surprised.
Yeah, to me, I mean, it was inevitable that it was coming because the way that the first generation worked was such a UI kit approach with the UI hosted controller, and you still needed a UI window and all that, right? It was still built on top of UI kit. So to me, it was just, yeah, that was the next logical step is if they're trying to phase out UI kit, which I'm still not 100% sure they are, but in the Swift UI silo of Apple, they are. So to me, it made sense. It was just sort of kind of the next, the next logical step, but yeah, but it's a good thing.
Yeah. I'm very happy to see the evolution and the dog fooding part of this that's coming out of Apple. That's always good. You know, there's things that we look at occasionally from time to time of them using it themselves. That's always a good sign, right? It means that the bugs and the edge cases will be fixed or sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of things that are coming out, so we've also got LiDAR on the list here. The iPad Pro that came out in the beginning of the year had the LiDAR sensor along with the Apple Magic Keyboard and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, that kind of had a, you know, limited bit of usage, but now the Pro phones have come out with LiDAR sensors as well, so that you can have things like UDZ support, you know, so you could have an object, you know, in an AR environment that will map your room, and then you put the object in the room. That's kind of an interesting use case. So, and you know, using it for things like measuring the room and things like that, which is kind of cool. So you can, you know, we all from time to time are retrofitting our houses or designing things or decorating, or you want to see if that couch is going to fit in that corner of the room kind of thing. You can do that now with apps like this, the IKEA app, and scanning your room with the LiDAR sensor. Right?
Yeah, it's so weird because I can't complain about it in terms of being effective because it is. It certainly makes AR stuff seem a little snappier and faster. Certainly seems like it's added some realism there. I just don't know that I've seen the killer app for it yet. So I'm excited for the future of, like, all right, once Apple sees that enough devices are out there in the wild that have this, what will they do with it sort of thing? And then, yeah, and then therefore, what will the industry end up doing?
They're not using it. You don't think they're using it for their photography stuff, like to sort of...
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, for their bokeh sort of effects and, you know, because they can measure where objects are in the room and decide what to focus on. And I haven't really played around the camera much, but yeah.
In that case, it's more additive, which is not something I'm complaining about. To be really clear, it's definitely better. I'm just hoping for, oh, here is this mind-blowing thing that would not have been doable before, that wouldn't have been practical before without LiDAR helping the way.
Well, you have the iPhone 12 Pro, right?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. I'm using one right now but Mark, are you using yours day-to-day or is it still sitting on your desk kind of thing?
I use it day-to-day, but yeah. I don't leave the house much.
Yeah, there's no, like, I'd have to explicitly try to do dark photography. There's no, oh, we're out with buddies and we're going to take a really good photo even in the dark corner because, you know, of the phone. It's like, well, pretty well lit in my house, so
right.
Yeah, but yeah, I never actually. I'm just got my camera underneath my desk right now because I've never actually tried to take a picture in the dark with it.
Exactly, because you'd have to go out of your way.
And do you find yourself taking a lot of pictures now that we're locked down?
Well, I mean, I take pictures when I'm walking my dog, and okay. I use my phone. I use the camera on my phone a lot for documentation purposes, like, you know, capturing serial numbers and stuff like that. But I just put the phone under, just held it underneath the dark part of my desk, and it's taking a picture as if it's it's a pretty well lit scene. You know, this is an iPhone 12 Pro, and you know, my naked eye can't see as well as this, the camera just took the picture in terms of how bright it's made the picture. You wouldn't know that it was a darkened, that I was holding the camera under the desk where it's dark, right? So interesting stuff. But you go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, to Mark's point, I just looked at my photos app, little photo stream, mm-hmm. and 2020s, just, you know, before you reach 2019 is really quick and yeah. fast to get to.
Yeah.
And then you go through 2020 and it takes forever. Sorry, 2019 takes forever. 2018 takes forever to get to 2017. So yeah, I've definitely taken far fewer photos this year than compared to years past.
Really? Oh, no.
They'd all be the same. I mean, maybe you like are better at taking photos of your dog or the interesting surrounding areas that you take your dog to. I take my dog on roughly the same trips that after 3-4 times of that, I wouldn't have any new angles.
Yeah, I suppose it's true. I mean, you know, I do use my camera a lot, you know, but then, you know, we're working on the house, I take pictures of parts of the house, and I've got pictures of, like, you know, people coming to visit me on the front lawn and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And you know, I went to the liquor store the other day and wanted to show Carol what different ciders they have there, so I take a picture of the ciders, you know, kind of thing, right? So, but you're right. I to be honest with you, I haven't really been very far myself. I, you know, walk the dog once a day, and that's pretty much my entire vitamin D supplement, you know, taking in, right? So, yeah, it's interesting. I guess I probably would have taken more pictures when I was out and about than I do now, right?
Sure.
Anywho. Well, of course, we had iOS 14 came out this year as well, and we had a number of things here. The app library, I have questions. Are you guys running iOS 14 on your phones yet?
Mm-hmm.
You are,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So this app library thing, why is it way the hell over on the right-hand screen? I mean, like, I've gotten rid of, I used to have like probably 8 pages of apps.
Yeah, it's pretty inconvenient to get there, which means I never use it.
So I got rid of like, I don't know if you know this or not, but when you're editing the screen, you can hit the page navigator at the bottom, and you can just hide entire pages of apps. But I basically put all my apps into folders, and yeah, so I very rarely go over to that app library. I just don't understand why they put it way over there. Why there's no sort of quick access to it, right?
Yeah, they should have, I don't know, maybe put something in the dock or put it on the search screen on the left, you know, when you go left or something like that, some access to it.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I had completely forgotten it was there until you mentioned it, actually. Sorry, yeah.
I'm not sure how far this is. So my first screen is taken up by 2 widgets, which I guess we'll talk about in a bit for 14. The second screen is sort of the main primary apps I use on a very, very frequent basis, including 2 smaller widgets. My third screen is like the next sort of tier of apps. And then the fourth sort of area is the app library for me. So it's not very far for me, but I don't go into this very often unless I'm like, oh, I know there was an app I was looking for. What was it called? I can't even search for it because I need the reminder of the image, you know, of the app icon itself or like the category to help me remember. Otherwise, I would just pull down and search for it, which is probably the most common case for apps that are not on my home screen, but are still on the device. Just not match your guys' usage.
The swiping from the left or swiping, you know, left to right brings the widget screen up. I never go to the widget screen, to be honest with you.
Oh, I do it all the time.
If I do, it's by accident. Well, maybe we'll talk about widgets you use there, but like I've got my main screen, and like my main screen has probably changed very little in the last 10 years because I still have, you know, the apps in the order that Apple gave them to me, and then I've added a few that I use every day. And of course, it's changed quite a bit since I'm not commuting anymore. And I've got like a couple of folders on here. Like I put all my Apple stuff into one folder so I can get to it, the Apple stuff I don't use. And then the second page is just completely folders with like minimum, you know, 6 apps in each folder, right? Some of them are like a couple of pages deep. And then there's stragglers on the next 2 pages because I was reading an article by a friend of mine who was showing how to sort of organize the apps, the app screens, right? And I got rid of 3 or 4 different screens. And like I said, I probably would use the app library more if it sort of came up easier than it does. Because 99% of the time when I'm looking for an app, I'm on the home screen and I swipe down in the middle of the screen and I start searching for an app, right? And the Siri suggestions are pretty good because it generally by the time of day knows what I'm looking for. So like on my iPad, it always brings up WebEx or brings up Teams or brings up Outlook because I'm generally working, right? Okay, let's talk about the widget screen because, I mean, I don't have any widgets on my home screen on my phone, right? And I very rarely go to the widget screen on from swiping to the left. So what are you guys doing with widgets? What's your
life lied. I don't go to the widget screen. I go to the search screen that you were talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, naming of like, what is this thing that I'm in this audio only medium is challenging. Yes, I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
And, but you could also like on that same thing, if I want to do something with a picture, I'll go in and I'll just search for image and then it'll give me suggestions of what apps work with images, right? So as an example, that's kind of sort of how I've been finding apps for the last 2 years, right? Because I've just got too many apps on my phone. But what about you, Hamid? So you're using widgets on your home screen. What do you got on there?
Yeah, so my first sort of screen here is...
First of all, how do you get a widget on your home screen?
If you long press in some open area that's not covered by an app, you'll get the little jiggle mode, but there'll be a plus in the upper left-hand corner.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This for somebody like me who didn't use the beta, I had to go... It's definitely not intuitive. I had to go look up some YouTube videos on how to do this the very first time I fired up my new iPhone. So my first two widgets, I have the large view of the weather app, which gives me, you know, the 5 day, 1, 2, 3, yeah, 5 day forecast, current conditions, and then, you know, what the next few hours look like. And then a smaller, but still pretty large, I think it's the two side by side, because, you know, these use up like little bricks, right? So like the large one is 1, 2, 3, 4 sort of widget bricks, standard widget units size for the weather app. And then the calendar for Google Calendar is the one that I have as a two up, because that's what will fit underneath. So that shows me, like, as soon as I wake up, what does my day look like? You know, I'm looking for weather, for walking the dog, and how many different kinds of rain are we going to get today in the Seattle area? And then the calendar for what meetings do I have going on today? That makes sense. My second screen is the other screen that has two smaller widgets. It's the two smallest widget sizes that you can get, which is, you're visualizing, it's roughly the size of what four app icons would take. I have one app called Sticky Widgets, which is basically like a post-it note on your screen. So I use that for, here is the thing I need to remind myself to do. It's kind of near term, but not something that I would have a reminder for that needs very specific timing. That's kind of more like the post-it notes you would put on your refrigerator, if that makes sense. The other one I have is a Smart Stack, which has two widgets, one for deliveries. I use the deliveries app to keep track of stuff coming from Amazon or gift packages and stuff. And Widget Wizard, which has a whole bunch of various different kinds of things. I liked using the calendar countdown, which earlier this year was leading down to major events like conferences that I was speaking at or projects that I had coming up due. In this case, it's down to New Year's Day, which is 1 day and 4 hours from now. So that gives me sort of a contextual overview of what's going on. I haven't gone very deep into widgets. There's all sorts of really cool stuff that people are going out of their way to make completely custom home screens that don't even look like iPhones, which is kind of interesting. And the recent updates to the way that shortcuts work seems to have made that more seamless, where it doesn't have a little weird sort of hiccup when you tap on something that's now a custom app icon. People wanted, you know, like Christmas boxes or anime girls or whatever it is that, like, this is your, you know, this is your Facebook app or this is your mail app icon. It's this literal different. I think we might have talked about the Windows 95 or 98 custom view that people did.
I was going to say, you've got Metro on the front screen of your iPhone, right? That was that interface that Microsoft came out with for Windows.
Yeah, it's kind of like the live tiles concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. You've just broken your iPhone. No, I mean, so that's your first view of your phone when you pick it up? Or
that being what? The first thing that I have is the calendar
sort of this widget world.
Yeah. Big calendar widget for, you know, what is the weather conditions look like now? What does it look like for the next few hours and then the next few days? And then what are the like two or three? I'm not sure. I don't have really, as you might imagine, while I'm on vacation right now, I don't have many things on my calendar. So I think this widget from Google normally shows probably two or three different events coming up this morning.
Like meetings and stuff like that? Or
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, right.
I've got Google Calendar integrated, so I have both my personal events as well as work events. Of like, let's say like one particular day might be, oh, I've got this, you know, this meeting at 9 a.m. and then I need to go drop the dog off at the vet for his checkup, and then, you know, some lunch event or something, so that it kind of helps me, like a dashboard, right? We've talked about how these widgets kind of turning into your macOS dashboard, if you remember, right? That space thing,
yeah.
Right?
Like, which I never used. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I used it for like a very small amount of time. I was like, no, forget it. Like it's not like a thing, but it seems more useful for my usage on iOS, right? Of like, I have very limited space visually here. I kind of need something to give me context versus, you know, I'm looking at my MacBook Pro is connected to a 4K monitor. I think it's a 4K monitor. So I've got tons of space where I just leave stuff up all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, my iPad, I have three widgets on the iPad, but actually four, I guess, because the ones that came with it, one tells me the time and date. It's got one's the news headline one, and one's a single view of a calendar, and the other one is a single view of the weather, right? So, and I'd never look at them, to be honest with you. I don't even know why they're on the screen, because, I mean, you know, there's so much space on the iPad that, you know, I've got application icons here, but yeah, there's not much, you know, I usually pick up a device and go in with a purpose in mind. I don't necessarily need to look at it and, you know, have it remind me of things like that, I guess. I don't know, different stuff. And it, you know, my work day when I'm working, I mean, off this week, but when I'm working, it's pretty routine in terms of when my stand-ups are and that kind of stuff, right? So pretty much my whole morning is just, you know, one meeting after the other, but they're always the same meetings, right? So anyway, that's okay. Cool. Have you guys thought about building any widgets or applets at all since it came out in iOS 14? Have you gone down that road at all or even thought about it?
Not really, no. It seems like kind of a cool thing to do, but I just haven't, I don't know, it just hasn't jumped out at me as something I must do.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the push this year after they got finished with all the M1s or the Apple Silicon stuff. They dove into widgets. That was a big highlight of Apple's work. And then the other one was the applet thing, which is the, we haven't really talked about yet on this show, but it's, you know, the idea that you can build a small feature of your app to let people try out the app without having to actually download the full thing, right? So, and have you guys thought about any application for that at all, or?
Yeah, I've had one that I haven't sat down and planned out, but it would be very, very specific to my needs. And I know folks are going to say, hey, there's like, you know, insert 5 million apps here that do something similar. Like, for example, probably Duolingo. In this case, it would be very specific to learning the Japanese writing system, starting with the basics of like hiragana, katakana, and then maybe if I got good enough of those where I could just, like my ABCs, I can just remember what those look like immediately. That might be useful. Like every, again, very similar use case of like, I wake up in the morning, I see what the weather is like, I see what my calendar looks like. I would like to have a widget that's like, here is randomly selected character. You have to identify what it is. And if I can't identify what it is while I've just woken up and sleepy, then obviously I've not internalized it, right?
And then you can't use your phone unless you know what that character is. It'll force you to learn.
Yeah, yeah. And so that would be a very specific need. It's kind of like getting like a flashcard or a cue card, like right in your face in the morning of what is this thing? I would say mentally, okay, this is what I think it is. And I could just tap and then the app just shows like, you know, this is what it is, right? So it would all be completely self-contained. There wouldn't need to be any analytics. There wouldn't need to be any, heck, you don't even need core data, right? This could just, there's only so many characters. It could literally just be a flat file, like a plist or something.
Yeah. So you just reminded me of an app that I got a while ago. And I just put it back, called Chinese Flash. And that would be a cool, because that's the same sort of idea as you want to study the characters, right? I think that's kind of sort of what you're looking for, right? I wonder if it has a widget. Maybe not.
I mean, it's out there. Yeah, I mean, if you are listening to this show and you have this kind of app, if you make that sort of widget, I guarantee you will have at least one person who will use that and talk about it on this show. Free promotion for you. I guarantee you. Just hit us up, hashtag AskMTJC on Twitter.
Yeah, see, that would be a perfect opportunity for these Chinese Flash guys to, I'm just scrolling through my widgets. No, they don't have it. But that would be a good application right there, right? Because that's the same sort of idea. It's like if you're interested in learning Chinese, that's why I grabbed the app. It was not that I was interested in how the app works, right? But, you know, the idea behind, you know, learning a new language would be kind of a cool sort of here's the word of the day kind of thing, even if you want to learn English, right? Because, I mean, you know, there's the whole word of the day thing that people have done in their lives, right?
Yeah, I actually think that would have been a very useful thing, too. When I tried to learn Mandarin Chinese a few years back, and I got, you know, I got okay at the spoken part, but never got anywhere with the characters. It's just too many characters, not enough time to memorize them all. You know, you can't get anywhere with knowing 10 characters. characters. You need hundreds of characters. So I never got anywhere with it. But that might have been a useful thing.
Well, even if you're learning like another Latin language too, like French or Spanish or something, mm-hmm. Portuguese, whatever, right? Cool. Another thing I've got here on the list here is picture-in-picture video on the iPhone. Have you guys ever found any use for that?
I've never even used it. No.
I haven't. I've accidentally triggered it, and I'm not even sure what. It's probably like Vimeo or something, possibly.
Yeah, YouTube maybe. Yeah.
Well, if I'm using YouTube, I'm probably using the app and not the web version, not the Safari version.
Yeah.
So I think you're right that I might have done it from Safari, because I don't think Google is able to prevent them from doing that. But I am a moocher, and I don't pay for YouTube. And anyway, I don't have YouTube Premium, YouTube Red, or anything like that. And they do not let you do that in the app itself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
In the iPad app, you can get picture-in-picture.
On YouTube?
Yeah. If I'm watching a video and I want to see other things, like I want to go back to the main menu, I can have I've got a video. I just did it right now. You just pull down from the top of the screen and it goes into the lower right-hand corner. And it can continue to play while you scroll through the rest of your feed and your library and all
that. Oh, yeah. So that's within the app, though. You couldn't like go over to Twitter.
Oh, but if I leave the app, you mean it doesn't?
Because you're talking about the picture-in-picture that lets you like go to your home screen and continue to watch a video, right?
Yeah, I think that means like if you're watching Apple TV or something like that. Let me call up Apple TV here.
Oh, that might have been what I did it with then. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So if I'm watching a Wonder Woman or something like that, which here, let's hit play.
So during the pandemic, I don't watch a whole lot of video on my phone or even my iPad. It's mostly on my TV because I'm home, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going. Oh, you went away. Where'd you go? Ah, I tried. Anyway, I'm calling this Siri Mini, but I don't know if you've noticed or not. But on your phone, when your phone rings, you don't get the full screen blocked by the phone anymore. It's now just like a little toast image or a banner image at the top of the screen. And the same with Siri. When you invoke Siri, you don't get the whole screen taken over by Siri. You just get the little bobble in the bottom, right? What do you guys think about that sort of idea? Sort of like not taking over our phones and devices with these other outside experiences like Siri and phone calls and stuff. No comments?
It's a nice quality of life thing. it's simultaneously a finally that people might say sarcastically. And at the same time, for me, and this might just be 100% a me problem, it also takes me longer to realize that a phone call is coming in, because I've had years, almost a decade of, oh, if it's a phone call, which for me tends to have some urgency or importance, it doesn't take over the entire screen. And if it doesn't take over the entire screen, it therefore is less important or urgent. So I just sort of look at it for a second or two. It's like, what is this notification? Oh, that's a phone call. I better answer that, right? So that's just a me thing. I'm sure, you know, after a couple of years, I'll get used to it and understand how to mentally interpret it. But right now, my muscle memory is not working effectively because of this change.
Right. Cool. By the way, I did manage to get the picture-in-picture working. I'm now looking. I've got Wonder Woman playing on one screen, and then I've got the Safari and another overlaid.
Wait, so that means it's coming out of like the you're not using HBO Max. This is through Apple TV.
I had to pay $30 to watch this movie.
Sorry, I forgot about that.
You're watching it as many times as you can.
iTunes. Exactly. I'm just going to let it play for like the next 24 hours. Right. Anyway, yeah, cool. And the last thing I have here is the BMW dongle that you can get for your new iPhone as well. Remember that one from the
WWDC? You can start your car with the phone. Is that the one?
Yeah. I think that was when Jaime's comment at the time was it was like the most expensive dongle you can get for your iPhone.
Yeah, it easily outclasses the previous contender, which I think, for your iPhone in particular.
Well, it's a stand for your Pro display, right?
Yeah, that's not for the iPhone, but I guess, you know, most expensive dongle you could buy was definitely the $1,000 aluminum stand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do not own a BMW, much less the newest one. So I do not have the capability of trying that out. Does anybody on the panel have friends or family that have let you try this out?
No. So is it just you can unlock your car and start your car with your phone? Is that the idea? Or your watch, I guess?
Yeah. And I remember that I think BMWs had the charging pad in there as well. So it was effectively replacing the key fob that you would have that, again, in a lot of modern cars, you don't actually insert into any keyhole or turn on any starters. Like you push a button because the key fob is in your pocket inside the car.
Cool. All right. And then the iPad OS, a couple of new things we had come out was Sidebar. And if you guys played around, any apps that use Sidebar?
I've actually played around with it quite a bit from a development point of view. It's pretty cool, actually. It's not perfect. You know, there's some weirdness to it. Like you can't ever hide the middle one if you have the first one show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit weird. It's not completely intuitive, but it's kind of a cool thing. It works well. Works nicely.
So does that work with the split view controller? Or
it is part. Yeah, it is the split view controller. When you init a split view controller, you give it a type, you know, is it double column or trip column?
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cause I have my split view controller app here that I haven't added any sort of sidebar support. Yeah. So I don't know what I would do to do that.
Well, right? So by default you have it, I think, right. If it's a double column, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you just have an old
one. So I've got the main detail. We've got the detail view and I've got the main view here in this app. Right. I know the Apple Mail app has it now, right? Cause you can go, where's my mail?
Yeah.
App? You can go, you can pull all the mailboxes out as well as have the main one.
I mean, it's a nice thing. It's not as big of a deal as Apple made it up to be, as usual, you know, but it's cool.
Yeah. And I guess you guys don't have Apple Pencils.
I have an Apple Pencil.
You haven't tried.
Have you tried Scribble?
I've tried Scribble. Yeah. Scribble works great.
Yeah. Have you used it a lot or just in filling in forms and stuff like that, or filling out web forms and things?
I got to be honest, I've mainly used it just in testing it out and trying it out. I haven't really used it much in for real. There's just not that many times where I have a need for that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only reason I use my pencil is when I'm working in Photoshop or something like that, right? I don't really use it more as a graphics tablet as opposed to writing with it. I mean, I'd love to be able to write on my thing, but I mean, since I've got this magic keyboard, I mean, the iPad pretty much stays connected to the keyboard all day long kind of thing. And I very rarely take it off and use it as an iPad per se, right?
Actually, one thing I use the pencil for quite a bit is making sketches in Notes and then sending them.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually quite a useful thing.
Yeah. So that's not new capability for me, like the Scribble y'all were talking about, but I do, as not an artist, predominantly use my pencil as a whiteboard marker for my iPad.
Yep. I'm just going to grab my pencil here. Like if you start drawing a square, does it fix your square? No, it became an N.
It does. You can set it to. It doesn't automatically.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, because I think that with that app that I had, Paper, used to do that, right? It had this sort of smart pencil.
Yeah, it would recognize if you were trying to make a triangle, a square, or a circle and make them perfect for you. If you got reasonably close to identifying what it was.
Try Scribble, it says.
But not doing that. Maybe it doesn't.
Scan. I don't use it for scanning at all. My notes. Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm just badly drawing things around the screen and not fixing.
I hadn't thought about that. You know, as somebody who hasn't worked in a physical office in quite some time, I hadn't thought about all of these different OCR type capabilities that iOS and I guess places like Dropbox are trying to push. How they would work for, like, okay, imagine you're in an office, you have done a whole bunch of whiteboard stuff with your crew. Normally it's like, okay, well, let's take a screenshot or take a photo and then send that image, you know, put it in a document or put it in Slack or email or something to share. I've never actually tried using the, you know, scan this item sort of stuff for that, but it probably would work pretty good because they'll often do optical character recognition. They'll often do de-skewing and cleaning up of stuff, and boggles the mind that I haven't thought to do it. Maybe because the last time I worked in an office, all this stuff wasn't as practical and easy as it is now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed that while you guys were talking, I just wrote a couple of notes here in Scribble, and the handwriting recognition has come a long way since my Newton, or even since my Apple Pencil experience, or my Paper by 53 experience. Right. So and Nemo was another app we tried out before. It's pretty good. Actually, give it more of a try. All right. I guess the next subject we have here on our year in review is tracking. You know, the privacy stuff that Apple's been doing. Have you guys seen any? I've seen people online talk about, you know, seeing their privacy comments or privacy statements in the App Store, but I've not seen any for my apps. Have you guys seen any of those privacy things that Apple said we would get?
So I got an announcement saying it was now turned on my phone, but I haven't gotten any announcements, any notifications yet, which I think is good.
So that was the question I had. So how do you know it's on or off? I guess that's the part I wasn't sure about in the settings, right? This is in the privacy settings, right? In your phone?
I may not have that turned on unless it's on by default.
Tracking. Okay, here it is. Here. So it's allow apps to request to track. I'm not sure. Allow apps to ask permission to track you. So if it's not on, does that mean I'm protected or I'm not protected? I don't understand.
So I read read this. I'm assuming you searched for tracking, and then it says literally allow apps to request to track, and then mine happens to have the switch on. So
right.
I interpret that statement to mean, yes, go ahead and allow apps to request to track. Otherwise,
right.
you would be protected if you turn it off and then see what happens, which I just turned mine off to see what will happen.
Well, it says here, allow apps to ask permission to track you across apps and websites owned by other companies. Apps that don't ask permission may still track you, may still try to track you. Doesn't Apple requires app developers to ask for permission before they track you on your device or whatever. So I guess, yeah, I interpret it as they have to ask me to, this is similar to share your crash information with the developer, right? You have to opt into that, right?
Yeah, I'm not
Oh, here it is. When you decline to give permission for an app to track you, the app is prevented from accessing your device's advertising identifier. App developers are responsible for ensuring they comply with your choices. But I don't understand, it's unclear as a user whether I'm supposed to check this on or leave it off. And we can ask our listeners to tell us what they think or know about this. But it's unclear to me, and you guys don't know, right?
I don't know exactly how this works, so I apologize, but I'm going into sort of the usual suspects of Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and none of those are triggering a pop-up, so I don't know what that means now that I have the allow tracking to off. Like, would I have to get a new app and then like, hey, this thing wants to track you. Allow, deny? Is that what I would get?
I don't know.
Wait, is that even... There was a delay on that being... enforced, right?
It was December 8th was the deadline, apparently.
But is that for like new versions of apps? Is it new apps? Like, there's usually like different tiers of that, right?
Yeah.
Because I have seen the privacy nutrition labels in the App Store.
I haven't seen those either. That's what I was asking
about. Oh, really? Right? It's okay. So like, I just opened up the App Store, I hit games, Doodle Jump 2 is the first thing I see. I scroll all the way down and there is data used to track you. The following data may be used to track you across apps and websites owned by other companies. Data not linked to you. I see those as information in the App Store itself, but I'm not seeing any of the pop-ups sort of thing.
That's what you were talking about, Tim? I thought you were talking about the COVID tracking stuff.
No.
The contact tracing, where if you've been near someone who has that. That's why I was saying I think it's a good thing that I never got any.
Yeah, I didn't question it because it was, to me, is a good statement even for the advertising tracking, which is what we're talking about here. But yes, it was in Washington State maybe like a month ago, I think, finally got into the COVID tracing stuff, so I was finally able to turn that on, and I'm also happy that I've not gotten any notifications, and I also have very rarely gone out.
So yeah, that's
kind
that's
of not surprised. Of
What was the name of the app that you said you saw the notification? Doodle
Jump 2? Jump?
Or Jump 2, okay, here we go. I'll go to that one.
And that's not to pick on them. I mean, I could choose, let's see, it was just Board Game Night, Monopoly. All right, let's see where it shows the App Store.
Yeah, see, I'm not getting, I don't get the nutrition label on this one.
If you scroll all the way, for me, I'm looking at, what am I looking at? Monopoly is what I'm looking at. It has ratings and reviews, what's new, in-app purchases, and then app privacy is a new section before information like, who's the seller, what's the size in megabytes, what's the category and stuff. You're not seeing those?
No.
Interesting.
I see preview, and then I see ratings and reviews, and I see what's new, in-app purchases, and then I see information.
Interesting. Are you on iOS 14.3?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me see what version I'm on. I think that's what I'm on.
Great question.
Yeah, this iPhone is on 14.3.
I'm pretty sure I'm on 14.03 because...
not 0.3.3.
No, 14.3. Oh, I'm on 14.2.1. Let me try my iPad. Thought I updated this already. Huh.
Yeah, it's that might be...
I remember specifically when that came out.
Unless they're rolling that out store by store, and are you looking at a Canadian store for your device?
Oh, look at that. My iPad's not on. I thought, could have sworn I'd already updated these two devices. What do you know? All right. Never mind. Never mind. All right. Let's talk about Big Sur. Have you guys played around with Big Sur at all or using it at all? Or?
Nope. I have not. And I was just about to when the auto updater problem came out. I said, no. I think I will just wait until things settle down a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I say latest, but I lost track of time. It's probably been a couple of weeks now that that's been a thing.
Oh, when you first weren't able to download. I got to hide this.
Did they fix it? I knew it was broken for some time, and I don't know if they pushed out a fix using other means to get things to work again. There was some minor version of Big Sur that was broken.
Well, when it first released, it was hard to get. Is that maybe that's what you're talking about? The server had a DNS issue or something?
No, this was like literally the auto updater code was broken in some version where it was, I'm going to get this wrong, but you know, I'm paraphrasing here, like, oh, it's supposed to be checking for version, what is it, like 16.1.1, and in fact, it's asking for 16.01, and it's like, oh, well, you've already got that, so
yeah,
I'm not going to give you the new thing. It's like, oh no, it's the worst possible thing that could happen, that the auto updater code is broken, and how do you now update people?
Yeah. I'm using Big Sur. I've been using it for months. I've been using it for like a month or so on my main machine too. It's I have it on one of my work machines too, and you know, Outlook has updated a lot of. It's funny, I've noticed a lot of dialog boxes from app updates are already having the rounded, you know, look on them, even though they're running on Mojave. Like 1Password has the rounded off buttons and stuff like that on Mojave, even though it's a Big Sur look and feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me wonder how the app developer implemented that.
So are they using custom backgrounds for everything?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're doing that as a transitional thing, like iOS 7 to 6, 6 to 7.
Yeah, looking at my dock and seeing various kinds of icons is a little weird. Transition period, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I mean, I think I don't know what I can tell you much about Big Sur, but somebody knows anything, you know, I mean, it's pretty performant. I mean, I haven't had any issues with it, other than, you know, nice look and feel and that kind of stuff. But I haven't had any surprises so far with it. Been pretty good. Alrighty. So we all experienced the first online WWDC, and I guess, you know, I think all the events this year, the September event as well was also online. What did you guys think about those?
Well, I thought it was, you know, given the circumstances, it was good. It was actually, there were some nice things. The fact that the videos were all produced, right, rather than just being live and then edited after, was actually kind of a nice thing because the quality was a little higher.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there were, you know, of course, we missed out on a lot of the in-person stuff, and the spontaneity seemed sort of gone, of course. So it'll be interesting to see what they do next year for WWDC. Because it is, you know, it's a high profile, high press thing, but it's also a very expensive thing for Apple. So, will they, when the, you know, the world opens up again, will they go back to doing an in-person one, or will there be an in-person one, but it's sort of a streamlined, sort of dialed down version, and they'll have most of the content will be online, or will you just go and sit in a room and watch the videos on a screen? It's, you know, it's possible.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of, you know, once bitten, twice shy kind of approach to the new world, right? Once we come out of this situation. I mean, like, I can comment on when I first started going to WWDC, it was pretty open. You had badges, and you had to sort of, you know, line up for events and stuff like that. And then there was the bombing in Atlanta at the Olympics, and there was, you know, bombings in, I think, Boston, there was a bombing. And there was some in Paris and places like that. And all of a sudden you saw dogs, you know, security dogs, and then people checking your bags as you came in. So, you know, this is probably like 2013 or so, I guess. So probably the second or third time I went to WWDC. So that was already, I was already starting to see the change in the way, you know, Apple was being a little bit more reserved about, you know, letting people in and that kind of stuff. And I think that this whole, you know, the next year or so, it's going to be, have you been vaccinated? Have you been tested? You know, how long ago were you tested and that kind of stuff? It's going to be a while before a lot of people are comfortable sitting in a large room with, you know, 500 or 1,000 other developers, right? Which is kind of, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but those rooms get pretty packed, right?
Yeah, there's no empty seats in a lot of those rooms. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of time before, long time before, a lot of people standing on the sides as well. I mean, I think it's going to be a long time before people are comfortable with that. And even Apple, from an insurance point of view, are going to be comfortable with, you know, bringing people from around the world to an event like that, right? But it might be a couple of years before we get back to that kind of thing. And we may have seen the end of a WWDC, right? I mean, trade shows and conferences. I mean, did they do C3 this year? I can't remember. You know, the big show in LA that happens around the same time, the Consumer Electronics Show.
Oh, that's in Vegas.
Vegas. Did they even do that?
Right. Talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. They did do it. But remember, that was in January last year.
Oh, okay.
Now, are they doing it this year? I doubt it. Let me check.
Maybe I'm thinking of the gaming one that happens
G3.
The Electronics G3. Entertainment Expo.
Yeah, is that down in LA or something like that? It's a big one too, right? It happens around the same time as WWDC.
E3 is in LA.
E3, yeah. So they didn't do one of those this year, did they? That's the gaming one? And
no, I think the GDC, the Game Developers Conference, I think also did not take place.
Right. Well, we also had an online 360 iDev this year, right? I both went to that for various things, and we had like meetups and things. Lots of Zoom calls this year, right? So even the conference in Toronto this year was Paul Hudson was sitting in his home in Britain doing his talk from there. So it's, I like the polish of it, but I kind of wonder, don't you remember with WWDC, they could basically, they used the app to sort of get the temperature of who was going to be interested in certain subjects, and they would double up some of the talks if they were overcrowded in the beginning of the week. They would have a replay later on in the week based on the interest, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they could sort of gauge the, you know, get a sense of what people were interested in and plan things out that way, right?
I think this year was given the circumstances, a pretty big winner for a lot of the reasons y'all stated, especially having the well-produced videos where, you know, the software is guaranteed to work because they wouldn't have produced the video if it didn't. And I also like that you had sessions of varying lengths, right? It was like, hey, is this only worth 7 minutes? Cool, that's what we will talk about. Whereas it either wouldn't have been worth talking about because, like, well, we can't stretch this out to a full 40 minutes, or it would have been cobbled together with a whole bunch of other things and maybe I only wanted to see the 7 minutes. So I appreciated the fact that it gave them flexibility to say, hey, if we're not looking to fill a couple of simultaneous tracks, what would we do? I do think that I miss, and this is going to sound ridiculous because I have not been in person to WWDC since 2015, so it's been 5 years now. I kind of miss the festival part of it, right? It felt more like a festival where, like, okay, Lopez, like, you didn't go to San Jose. I was like, yeah, but, like, I know people who did, or, you know, I can live vicariously through them and didn't get to enjoy any of that this time. So kind of hoping that whatever they continue to have some festival aspect.
If you remember this time last year, you were talking about you might actually be in the area around the time and we would all meet up instead of going to the show or something like that. Weren't you? Yeah. Saying something like that?
Yeah, I was behind the scenes making some connections here of like, hey, let's go get burritos or something.
Right,
like, I'll be roughly in the area around that time.
And
it didn't work out that year.
Yep.
This year.
Yep.
Yeah, the other thing that from the meeting up point of view is, I mean, there's been a few through the year, there's been a few meetups. So like Release Notes did a sort of a happy hour kind of thing where they had, you know, 60 people join a call, and then they used the Zoom breakout room to break into like groups of nine at a time, right? And I know that there has been a couple of conferences where they had sort of a coffee call kind of thing recently. 360 iDev did the Stump the Experts thing Stump 360, where, you know, we do the trivia contest there, and you know, you have the speakers versus the audience sort of thing, and that's a lot of fun. And they could have done something like that at WWDC too. That was kind of missing this year. Like, they usually have like the women's meetup, women developer meetup. They usually have like-minded meetups, and they also have the engineering rooms. Like, they did have the engineering sessions where I think one of our listeners on our Slack channel booked a meeting to go to one of those. None of us did, right? But
I didn't know they didn't have those specialty ones, and you just weren't invited.
That could be. But that's what I'm saying. Like, why? I suppose they could have had something like that. Like, I don't know if that's sort of done by champions of those kind of causes, right? So I wonder what the attendance was from the WWDC Live sort of perspective for them, right? Because essentially it was kind of like Netflix. They pushed out a day's worth of videos and you could watch them in any order you wanted. I mean, we did watch parties ourselves. Like, we got together we had to open up our Zoom channel and invited some friends of the show and some colleagues and stuff like that. And we sat and watched things together and chatted back and forth as, like, we would agree on which session to watch together. And we would all simultaneously push the start button and, you know, go through the, as if we were sitting in the room, and we would comment back and forth on Slack with each other about, you know, what we were seeing. And I think we even had our microphones that were hot, so we could actually talk to each other while the movie was going on or the video was playing. So we kind of made a social event out of it, right? There was a group of people who put together a sort of a group call where you could sit down and do the same sort of idea. They could join up. And so I think that's a thing that's missing from one of the things that I liked about WWDC was, here's an opportunity where, you know, I don't know about you, but
about, like, in your daily life, do you hang out with a ton of developers? You know, for a lot of us, you know, in the early years of iOS development, we didn't. So it was like the chance to meet up with 5,000 other people who did have the same interests with us, right? And, you know, by sitting at a lunch table or just hanging out in a line, you met lots of people and talked about, you know, what they were doing and whatever. There was that big social aspect of WWDC was missing for me, right? I made lots of friends in the lineups for the keynotes and stuff like that as well, right?
Yeah, the festival aspect of it, I think, is the best way I can think of to describe it. And that was absolutely missing this year. But really hoping that whatever they come up with for next year or the year after will incorporate some of that.
Yeah. Tim, did you stay up all night long the night before the keynote this year?
No, I did what I do every year. I got up at 6 in the morning for you, 9 a.m. for you guys, right? So it was a long day. I do remember specifically that day waiting. Because for me, you know, it's like 1 p.m. in the afternoon when the keynote hits, right? So there's a whole half a day of anticipation waiting for this event to happen, right?
I hadn't really thought about that aspect, that you could have simulated, and you would need a whole bunch of other people, but you could have simulated, okay, everybody go to the local coffee shop, get a cup of coffee, and then go stand outside your door for however long you want to. What would you have done to try to get into the keynote, and then go inside and turn on your
hold
your
my spot while I go have a pee, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or I'm going to do a burrito run. You want me to get you one, right?
Yeah, and then through the magic power of, you know, online video chat, you could have all been involved in that same sort of thing, pretending that you're all in the same line.
Yeah. That's missing. Anyway, so the last thing we have on our list here is the iPhone 12 Pro, the Mini, the Max, and 5G. What do you guys have to say about that?
I'm pretty happy with my iPhone 12 so far. I hadn't updated since I was using a 10 still. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty nice speed boost. It's not, maybe it's just, you know, I've been doing this too many times, but it's not like the, you know, the world has changed kind of experience like it used to be. It's just a new phone. But it's nice. It's fast. Am I jaded?
I think it's similar to me. I had an iPhone 10 that I upgraded from. The 12 is very nice. Very nice upgrade. 5G, I don't think I've been in areas to be able to really, really test that, especially because I'm not getting the UW, the ultra wideband section. So it's maybe been a bit better at handling LTE than my iPhone 10 was. It's kind of like an incomplete status for, you know, 5G. And I don't know that I've been out enough to notice being connected to it or notice, oh, this actually would have been a real hassle or I wouldn't have had time to do this without 5G, just simply because I've mostly been home, mostly on Wi-Fi.
So this is interesting. I just did a speed test and telling me I got 175 megabits, but I have Wi-Fi on. So let me turn Wi-Fi off and just see who's lying to me here. Okay, now it says 5G. All right, now I got to figure out how to make the app stop showing me ads and okay, test again.
This is the speed test app?
Yep. All right, here we go. Connecting.
So I've had 5G on my phone. Yeah, go ahead.
So I turn off my Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And it says 5G, and now I get 27 megabit.
So it's slower?
By a factor of like almost 3.
100, yeah. Oh, really?
4? Yeah. 5, actually. Factor 5. Wow.
Make sure you're not covering up the little plastic window. Are you holding it wrong?
Am I holding it wrong?
Use your left hand.
Yeah. All right. Let me try that again.
Aim the little window out, your actual window.
I have 5G and I don't have the little window on my phone.
No, that's, I don't know if it's just USA, but for sure in the USA. Not in the United Kingdom, and apparently not in the lands of Canada.
Yeah. My phone's maple powered though, right?
Maple colored. Does maple have a specific color, or is it just kind of a brown, tannish kind of color?
Well, maple syrup is sort of, that sort of caramelized sugar look to it. Yeah. Yeah. But maple trees are generally green leafed until the fall when they can turn orange or red. I think the sugar maple.
Turn Wi-Fi on again, and now it's up in the 200s.
Wow.
Yeah, so the 5G stuff is definitely something to test outdoors, depending on your provider, depending on the actual network that's in your area. Pretty good chance it's not going to penetrate all that well through walls, which is kind of what I've seen in my behavior. And I think the times I've tested out just a very little bit of 5G stuff has been like, oh, I'm, you know, outside in a car and I'm waiting for something, maybe like a drive up pickup for groceries or something. I'm like, oh, well, while I'm waiting for them to come out and put stuff into my trunk, I think I will download this thing or, you know, do whatever. And I just haven't been in areas that have really been able for me to test out the 5G. Like if we weren't in a pandemic, I would say, oh, well, yeah, like I was at the movie theater, you know, in the lobby, you know, not in the theater itself, just so folks don't send us angry letters, or I'm at a cafe, or, you know, I'm in some out and about sort of situation that I just really haven't had a chance to try out this year. Right. So I think that's where it's kind of hard to tell what I think about this as a 5G capable thing, other than I appreciate the fact that it will, you know, increase the longevity of me hanging onto this device, presumably as 5G networks get built out.
Hmm. All right. Well, I guess we get to our picks here. I've got a few, so maybe Jaime, you want to go first or?
Sure. Mine is like many things that we often choose. This will be best to, if you're driving from home, I'll pull over the car here and check out the show notes for the links, because this is a video on YouTube of what claims to be a prototype Apple Watch, including the security case and box that it came in. So it, as far as I know, is known to be legit as of this recording. It's kind of interesting to see how this prototype worked. It kind of looks like a tiny little iPod sort of case, but has the functionality you would roughly expect on an Apple Watch. It's kind of interesting to see. I don't know, again, if this is legitimate or not. I don't think I've seen anything that proclaims it not to be, but I think that's kind of fascinating.
So this is a prototype of the original iPhone?
Original Apple Watch.
Oh, sorry, Apple Watch. Yeah, yeah. So rather than having a digital crown or it looks like there's a couple of buttons on the side and then this thing here. Cool.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's got that honeycomb sort of UI on it. And
right.
It's kind of
springboard, yeah.
I don't think it's that long. Is it like 4 minutes? Yeah, it's like 2 minutes long. I don't know if this is...
Yeah, there was an original when they were working on the iPhone on the Purple Project. There was a thing they called a Wallaby, which is like it had a touchscreen interface, but it was not really an actual phone, and they didn't actually get to see the phones until quite a bit later, like in the production, very close to when they were shipping. They actually saw the physical device, right? So,
well, is that what this is? I mean, it looks pretty legit in the video, and there was touchscreen, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, this is a prototype though for the watch, right? From the very first. This is talking about the Watch 1.0, the OG, right?
Right.
The Lisa tester, they call it.
What were you talking about?
The very first iPhone, like when
iPhone.
It was called Wallaby back in the day, and it was like it was almost like a Frankenstein kind of deal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it had it was all laid out. It had a touch screen on a board, and you know, you didn't actually. It wasn't like you could hold it in your hand. It was sort of the way it was described. It was sort of like a breadboard kind of project, you know, sort of idea. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I've got a couple of picks here. One is we were talking about this in the after show, and I can't remember if I left it in the show or not, but we were doing a screen share and these guys were like freaking out over the amount of icons I have on my desktop. And that's because I have a program that I run on my desktop called Hazel, and I've had it for many, many years. And it's now version 5, and you can buy like a multi-user license. So you can have like it on four or five machines, or you can buy it for one Mac. And what it does is you set up these routines that, you know, if you're one of these people like me that say stuff to the desktop all the time, or you download things to downloads, you know, your download folder can get full of all kinds of cruft over the years, right? So I have routines where I have like a zip folder and a DMG folder, and then I have a PDF folder. And so when I download a bank statement, whatever, it'll take the bank statement, it'll move it into a specific folder. And so what Hazel does is, and if I download a picture to my desktop or download a picture to the downloads folder, it'll migrate it over to the pictures directory, right? So whenever I download something or save something to the desktop, I always know where it's going to get picked up and put away, right? So I never worry about where I'm saving things. And because Hazel will just, you know, look at the type of file it is, or look at the file name or the extension or what have you, and decide where to put it away for me, so that like later on I'll know where to look for it, right? So that's kind of cool. It wasn't very expensive. I think, you know, under $100 or whatever for like a five user license, or five machine license. Another thing too, this is from the Objects-C IO boys. They have done a Swift UI layout explain. It's a series of videos that they did last year it was part of their subscription thing, but for Christmas they were giving it away or letting you watch it for free. So I'm not sure when it's going to end, but so if you want to take a look at it, grab it right now and have a look at it. But it was really cool because what they did was, you know, these two guys are, you know, sort of level quite sophisticated developers. And so what they did was they go through how they would write Swift UI, you know, given, you know, Swift as the base language. And they go through how they, using protocols and stuff like that, how they would basically write out, sort of reverse engineer how Swift UI works, right? So it's kind of cool to watch. If you look at the sections in the video, they go through a number of things like, but anyway, Chris and Florian go through the whole breakdown of how Swift UI layout works. So they look at, you know, protocols and shapes, and they look at frames, alignments, you know, sizes of different things, how HDACs and works with fixed views, custom alignments and that kind of stuff, layout priorities. And it's an interesting sort of exploration. It's probably like they're like each section is probably 20 to 30 minutes long. It says here 4 hour watching time, but yeah, check it out if you're interested in how Swift UI works, or how, you know, under the hood, this is sort of their sort of take on it. Brilliant guys to watch them code anyway. That's sort of cool thing. And so Tammy, our friend Tammy Coron, has just published a book. We talked about it on the show when it was in beta. It's called Apple Game Frameworks and Technologies. And for the longest while, I mean, you know, Tammy's a big supporter of SpriteKit and SceneKit. And she did a book with Chris Language on 3D technologies a couple of years ago. And but this one is for pragmatic programmers. It's basically, she goes through a couple of things. One is she does an app basically using just writing out the code to create, you know, all the sort of sprite kit stuff, like nodes and labels and sounds and stuff like that, and build a basic app. And then she goes through using the SceneKit editor, which is kind of a more sophisticated way to do it. And she rolls in GameplayKit. I've been looking to refactor one of my games for many, many years. It was written in Cocos 2D, and I want to bring it over to SpriteKit. And Apple added about 4 years ago, they started adding in artificial intelligence and gaming systems into GameplayKit. But there's never really been any sort of, you know, sort of guide on how these things work. And so the second half of the book goes in quite deep into the SceneKit editor and how to create components and entities and sort of use the AI parts of GameplayKit to work through the how to build a game. So it's kind of a very sophisticated look at it. She doesn't go too deep into it. And as I was saying at the top of the show, I don't know if I left it in the show or not, but despite what Tammy claims, there is a lot of math in this book, but it's not written in such a way that it'll break your brain. It's actually very, very well thought out, using, you know, because you have to use vectors to figure out, you know, directions and movements and stuff like that, and follow paths and things like that. So using weights and things like that. So that's kind of a cool look at game technology. I'm near the end of the book, and now it's sort of looking at Game Center back in the day. So back in, you know, Game Center kind of went away for a while, but it's never really gone away. And now with Arcade, it's come back a bit. And so now GameplayKit sort of taps into and makes it easier to write things for leaderboards and achievements and challenges and stuff like that. And she goes through some of the basics of doing that as well. So
leaderboards and achievements have always been there. But what they did was they got rid of the whole friends concept.
Yes, right.
And there used to be this whole mechanism for matchmaking, you know, to play with friends or whatever. They got rid of all that, which was kind of a pain for apps that used that.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't quite, you know, straightforward in terms of leaderboards is pretty simple, but, you know, because I have a number of leaderboards in one of my apps. Like, you know, one is like how far you've gone, how many points you've gotten, how many collectibles you've picked up. So I have like three leaderboards in the game for that. And then I have another one for achievements, but it's sort of half broken because only half of the achievements are working for me. And because I do remember at the time it was very similar to in-app purchases. It was like not quite straightforward how you set these things up. And
yeah, I had to set it up inside App Store Connect as a separate thing.
You still kind of do, but I think the way that GameplayKit now interfaces with, I mean, you had to write a lot of code to basically get it to work properly too, right? So, but now it's sort of all rolled into protocols and stuff like that as well, right? Part of GameplayKit. Since I was, you know, I've been off this week and I've been doing a lot of coding, Apple has also updated their Swift UI tutorials. I think when Swift UI first came out last year or 2 years ago, there was a bunch of tutorials on how to, you know, do it, how to write things. And this year's set of tutorials goes a little bit deeper, but basically you're, again, like I said at the top of the show or top of the section there on Swift UI, you're basically working with an app as opposed to working with with an app delegate. It goes through a number of different things. It's basically a Scrum planner is what the basic app is. So you've got like, you know, how to put people into meetings and how to time them. And it's even got some text-to-speech capabilities built in, which is kind of cool in the last sort of section of the app. So it's sort of like, you know, if you're doing a stand-up and you've got people talking, the app will actually capture their what they're saying and turn it into text, which is kind of a cool little feature there. But yeah, if you're interested in Swift UI from Apple's perspective, it's kind of an interesting set of tutorials on how to use them. And it's quite illuminating in terms of how to build an app, right, using Swift UI. So those are my picks for this time around until the end of the year, right? Any questions, comments? No?
seemed like good picks.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another year. So, hey, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter, is at Dev of the Hair.
All right. Mark, if people want to get in touch with you?
Mark R at smapsoft.com.
All right. And as usual, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next time, we'll say bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC, and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Another year, another trip around the sun completed. Yep. 300 revolutions. I guess I can get back to Tammy's book and finish it off. Pretty well written. I mean, I've gone through tons of books over the time, and I got to say this one's written really well because it doesn't. There's not a lot of. I mean, I've made mistakes going through the book, but I haven't really found anything that's been out of place. So, kudos to Tammy on that one.
Do you have a hard copy or electronic copy?
No, I bought it. I just bought it. I've got beta 8 here, but she says that's the last version she's done.
So that would be digital copy then? This is to answer Mark's question. That's a digital copy then is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's just, I just bought I bought it when it was 20% off or whatever on Pragbar. I'm supporting my friend too, right, by buying it. So
yeah, it's a win-win.
Yeah, it answers a lot of questions. I mean, it's funny, you know, when you wanted to, if you Googled around for gameplay kit to find out more about it, the only person who ever came up was Tammy, and she did a bunch of talks or like videos on LinkedIn that kind of sort of explained them very loosely. But I think that set of videos is now no longer online as well, right? So, which is annoying. Here's some real-time follow-up. I just finished updating my phone. Let's see if I can see any of these warnings inside of continue. See, what was I looking at? Doodle Jump, right?
Yeah, it should be any app that gives you the little nutrition label for data privacy.
Yeah, because I wanted to see, because I had gone in our app privacy. Oh, I see. There's an app privacy
no
section.
Provided, right? With a warning sign.
Data not linked to you. Oh, so I can look at my apps now, right? So that's why I was kind of curious, because I did go in and answer all those questions. Basically, I don't store anything about you. I just wanted to see what it says, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at Geese Squad, and it says data not collected. The developer does not collect any data from this app.
Yes, good. I'm looking at device tracker.
Uh-oh, no details provided on scales and modes. I better get on that.
Good to know. I have to get rid of some of these reviews. They're not very favorable. I never really bother looking at them or worrying about them. Yeah. Data not collected. Security guards. Data not collected. So yours just says no comment, Mark?
It says no details provided. The developer will be required to provide privacy details when they submit their next app update.
Oh, because you haven't done an update recently.
I haven't done an update in a while on this one.
I think you can actually go into iTunes Connect and just say what you do and what you don't do, right?
Yep.
Yeah, because I've only got 5 apps on the App Store right now. Pi Day Countdown. What does Pi Day Countdown do? Yeah, I just went in and checked the box and right, like when a couple of months ago, I guess, right? Oh, look, I have stickers in my app. Ooh, yep. Well, that's good to know. Good to know. All right. You guys got planned for tomorrow?
What's tomorrow?
31st.
New Year's Eve.
Oh, yeah. You're doing
I'll probably just stay home.
So here...
You're probably what?
I'll probably just stay home.
Traditionally, here in the Seattle area, there's the big fireworks going on at the Space Needle. As you might imagine, right. They don't want to encourage people to come out and go view such a thing. Right. So I think T-Mobile is sponsoring the virtual AR-enhanced fireworks for the Space Needle. So I'm assuming it will be just normal Plain Jane Space Needle. If I look, well, not out my window, but if people looked out their window and would have to turn on to the telly, as people like to say, and see the oohs and ahs of, like, imagine what these fireworks are like as our CGI graphics do their thing. It's
right.
And probably will end up watching, Ryan Seacrest, I think, is who took over for Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve countdown.
Are they doing a thing this year?
I assume so, because I'm pretty sure I've seen his face on TV commercials in the background.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could just do it remotely, right? It'll be Ryan Seacrest talking to, I don't know, Ariana Grande and Justin Bieber and people, you know, but over Zoom. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. It's kind of, I mean, you know, it's not like all this stuff is going to instantaneously be over, but it will be kind of nice to punt 2020 out of here. See it in the rearview mirror. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I watched Wonder Woman this afternoon. I want my $30 bucks back. Did that for the show. Anyway.
Wait, $30 to pay for you?
Yeah, $29.99 Canadian to rent it for 2 days.
Wow.
Where you get it for, not free, but you get it as part of your Hulu. Is it Hulu or?
HBO Max over here. HBO Max, for the low price of $14.99 US. It is either, that's what you paid, and then you get all these other things for free. Like I've been binging a whole bunch of Curb Your Enthusiasm to catch up on. Or you consider getting HBO Max for the other things and say, then Wonder Woman 1984 is free. As I like to say on the other show, you guys' socialized sci-fi is finally working in our advantage over here in the States.
Yeah, it comes with our healthcare, yeah. I have a pair of Skull Candy headphones I'm using right now that are wired in, but they have Bluetooth, but I think we found out in the first year we were doing the show that it was like a lag, you know, like it's bad enough we're in different, you know, parts of the country, right? But, or the continent even, right? Yes, Siri Bob.
I thought we decided that was the border security checking in.
they have to have like a 5 second delay on our.
Exactly.
Our feed. Yeah. Could be.
There's a whole meme on the internet, largely for like Reddit, where people will either blame or in some cases congratulate their quote FBI guy that is listening in on their stuff. So you might use this as like, you know, I have to look up some really weird stuff. Sorry, FBI guy, you know, sorry in advance that you have to follow along and creep in on what I'm doing. Or people will post stuff like, hey, like, as it turns out, this message didn't go out to this person. And thankfully it didn't. And I got a little thank you from the FBI guy. I'm like, hey man, I saved this relationship for you by not blocking your message from going out. Whole internet meme, so we're probably not that far off.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Would not be surprised.
Just to put a cap on it, the funniest meme version of that I've seen was the supposed photo of like the NSA guy crying because everybody keeps saying FBI and not giving appropriate attribution.
Even the NSA wants their likes.
The poor NSA guy
did it for the gram. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.